Do Ferrari ever stick to plan A? Would Lance Stroll also blame a yellow bollard in a bank parking lot? Welcome to Tinfoil Helmets, your occasional spicy hot take roundup of all the latest F1 rumors, with the almost believable conspiracy theories to back them up. Everything here we have carefully researched for hours to make sure they are totally founded in logic, reasoning, and truth. Or not. Who knows? And if anything today, I think we have proved how much we researched this, because Dominic, we went 4 for 4 on our predictions.
We did?
We did. Granted, one of them, it's like 3.5, but I'm just going to give it to us just for the sake of doing it.
Okay. Really?
Really?
Yes. I'm reviewing this live, real time, and being like,
One of the Williams crashes out in the sprint. Yes, Logan spun around, which in a sprint, in all intents and purposes, is crashing out because, you know, there's no recovery time and he did it late. So that's the one that I'm going to give us a little bit of a pass on. If we want to knock it down to 0.5 point, I'm fine with it. But still.
But it needs to be at least 0.75 points because, notice it said here, because the statistical reality is when you keep crashing and, most importantly, run out of parts, he had to start from the pit lane because he'd broken a front nose and they needed to use a different nose and they didn't have all the parts, so it was a different specification.
All right, we'll definitely give it a full point there. Yeah. I missed Logan starting from the pit lane for some reason. I guess I just don't care about that, something that far down the back of the grid.
Yes, especially when you're in 20th and you decide to start from the pit lane.
What's the difference?
Indeed.
Merck down the back. I mean, between Lewis qualifying in 18th and really them having no pace on the Ferraris or McLarens, I'm going to kind of go, yeah.
Yep, down the back. I mean, is 18th down the back? Is there any more down the back than that other than the pit lane?
Yes, 19th and 20th. Yes. First GP with a non-1-2 finish. Thank you, Lando Norris.
What was the 1-2 in Australia?
Ferrari.
Oh, Charles was second?
Charles was second.
Huh, forgot about that.
Yeah.
I forget about Charles a lot.
Well, we'll talk about him a lot this week.
Indeed.
And Zhou will be out-qualified by Bottas, but will finish the race. Yeah.
He did. And then cried on the tarmac, looking very excited in front of his home crowd.
I was going to save this for like the end of the race recap, but I really liked the, we'll put the national driver like out in front on the grid as well. Like he had his own little parking spot and like.
Oh, I missed that. I thought he'd come from the pit lane.
No. They had a Zhou like thing that they put like placard that they put in front of the car, so you had 1, 2, 3 and Zhou because they knew he wasn't going to finish 1, 2, or 3.
Oh, that makes more sense.
But they had it there so he could park up in front and wave to the crowd, and I thought that was like a great bit for the home race driver. Like, I mean, think of it, Charles could actually finish on the grid at Monaco if they did that for him,
even when he doesn't start the race.
Right,
magic. You can't do that Silverstone. You'd need like an extra 5 spots.
I do think this fun thing about sports sometimes is the pomp and circumstance around it. And, you know, in a Formula One World Championship, when you go to that driver's home Grand Prix, I think it's nice when they get a little bit of extra attention on themselves.
Yes, and I'll give credit to the race director, TV coverage director, who did seem to try and make a bit of effort to actually show Zhou in the right spot on the race. And also, every time he did anything on the track, the crowd seemed genuinely excited, which I thought was also pretty good.
I still think Mexico also is the best at putting their own unique spin on the race, though. I think Mexico does it very well. And I wish more GPs tried to do things like Mexico, because Mexico sounds awesome.
So given that we got so many things right, does that bring up our batting average?
Yeah, we're now batting 568.
Is that good?
Yes.
Oh, that's a 56% hit rate? Is that the
right rate?
Okay. Yep. That seems a little low. 56? That's almost...
Are we talking baseball or are we talking our predictions?
What's the difference?
Because baseball, if you're batting 300 plus, you're having a really good season.
I see. So in baseball, hitting 30% of the balls is considered amazing.
Yes.
Oh, interesting. I did not know that.
Yeah. Like if you bat like 380, so like 38% of the time, you might win the batting title, like the best batting average that season.
Fascinating.
Nobody's batted over 400 across the whole season in like years.
That is so fascinating. I would have expected, like, I'd have expected the best to be much better than that.
I They're very good, but I'm still definitely on the team camp of hitting a baseball is the hardest thing to do across any sport.
Oh, interesting. I can see that. I can subscribe to that.
Because the really, really good pitchers, they have the exact same release point, whether they are throwing a fastball or an off-speed pitch that's going to curve. So, and you have about, I think, a third of a second reaction time to like figure out where that ball's going to go and where you actually have to swing as it's coming at you at 90 plus miles an hour. And is it going to be breaking away? Is it going to be breaking towards you? Is it going to stay up in the zone? Is it going to go down in the zone? Like, you have to figure out where this ball's going, because it's because the laces on it cause it to spin in such a way that like it can move. So, and because really good pitchers have like the same release point, like it's very hard to judge. Like, you can't just tell like if they're coming out or not. That's why like tipping pitches can become such a big deal, where like you've seen things where pitchers will have like the glove up if it's a fastball, or down if it's a curveball. Yeah. And then it's like, oh, I know what his glove is. So there I'm going like that.
It's basically poker, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
In fact, there was a really good pitcher by the name of Randy Johnson, mostly famous for killing a bird. Go look that up. But he was talking to a batter who, you know, he had faced a couple times, and they were both retired at this point in time. And it's like, man, how did you do so well against me? And it's like, Randy, show me a fastball. And he showed him with his glove closed, and then he held his glove closed, and show me a curveball. And he realized he had his glove open. And for his entire career, it turned out Randy was tipping his pitches. And this is a guy that's like a 10-time All-Star, multiple Cy Young winner, World Series MVP, 5,000 strikeouts, 300-game winner. Like, yeah, Randy was tipping his pitches his entire career, apparently, and nobody could still hit him because he's the unit. He's awesome.
The thing that blows my mind about that is not the success. It's the fact that nobody on his team was like, FYI, you're like telegraphing what you're about to do. You should probably fix that.
I mean, if he's 5,000 career strikeouts, I'm not going to tell him to do anything different.
I feel like you're amazing, but you could be amazing. So anyway.
Anyway, should we get back to Formula One?
Yes, this is a Formula One podcast, not baseball, and I am not about to fall down a baseball hole.
We'll save that for after the recording.
Indeed. So, between race drama?
There was a little bit.
There was a little bit, just a sousson. We have Alonso making a decision about his team. Now, the question is every time Alonso does this, this is normally drama-filled.
And not only making a decision about his team, but his future, and doing it in front of a white backdrop, sitting in front of a camera while driving for Aston Martin.
I missed that. Missed that bit. I saw all the other coverage, but I did not see that video.
Yeah, it was shades of Vettel's retirement, and almost in the same of like, I have made a very important decision, and for the next two years, I'll be racing for Aston Martin.
And so I totally missed that. He was clearly setting that up for everybody to think he was about to retire. Carlos was watching that video being like, maybe this is my... Oh, wait, no, it's not my chance.
The interesting thing I think about that is 2026 means he will be once again partnered with Honda, and I wonder how Honda will feel about that.
I have to assume that that was actually a point of discussion. I have to guess that that really was in there.
Right, we'll see if Honda actually pulls out of this. Like, yeah, they could.
Can they? Oh, no, I know what they'll do. I know what they'll do. They're going to be there, and they're going to do the first race because it'll be written in a contract, and then the contract will be structured in such a way that they don't have to do any more races. But then they will sell the engine group to Aston Martin so that they have their own engine team.
Oh, I was thinking this also tees off great. I mean, I know Andretti's trying to come with Cadillac, but I mean, Andretti and Honda also go very well together in IndyCar, so.
Perfect. Last minute change of tune. Aston Martin gets stuck with GM engines.
Yeah.
What else? The other piece of between race drama, I think this is actually probably the most significant part. Charles Leclerc got a dog.
Do we know what kind of dog?
It is a Labrador, and it is a very adorable floppy-eared puppy. It's an actual puppy. It's not like, you know, a mostly grown dog. This is a puppy, and I'm fascinated by why the hell Charles Leclerc got a Labrador dog. Like, at least with Charles and his cats, right? You leave him in Monaco, you don't have to worry about them for weeks on an end. Lewis has got to the point that basically he's lent his dog to some person in LA for the entire year. It's very fascinating to me.
This seems like I don't know how much you know about dogs, but this seems like the perfect move for me. Because if there's one thing Charles Leclerc needs, it's a best friend.
True.
And a Labrador will always be your best friend.
Yes, a Labrador will love you no matter what you do, how infrequently you see them, no matter how bad your on-track performance is.
and they will always be happy to see you, and they won't tell you Carlos Sainz is the better Ferrari driver, and they won't second-guess your strategy.
And they won't judge you when you've been it at the most important point in qualifying and or racing.
They'll just be happy to see you again. This is the perfect dog for Charles. So
I think what you're really saying is Charles did not get a dog. Charles got an emotional support animal.
Yes.
Okay. I can see that. And I can actually see that being the perfect thing for Charles. I feel like he's a very sensitive young man.
We could also go with the line of men will do anything except go to therapy.
True. True.
This seems perfect.
Yes. I mean, I can imagine a therapist is quite expensive in Monaco.
That's true.
Do we want to do our occasional segment about certain people having jobs or not?
I think it's important. Yeah, let's do it. Okay. Let's go for it.
Let's start with Lewis. Does Lewis still have a job?
I mean, at Ferrari, absolutely.
So far, I'm sure there's a clause in there somewhere.
Yeah. It'll be really interesting, but I mean, I don't see Ferrari getting rid of Lewis at this point in time. Like, because to be honest, like we're not going to talk about the race right now, but I think Lewis actually had a pretty decent weekend.
In hindsight, but that's not how it felt for the first quarter of the race.
But I think there are a lot of like, I think Lewis can very well still hide behind the fact of that Mercedes is terrible.
Yes.
And I think there was some good proof this weekend that Lewis is right that Mercedes is terrible.
Yes, I agree. What about Mr. Logan Sargeant?
I don't know how. Like, yeah.
I thought that when they gave the message at the end of last year, this is the Williams team saying, we've seen the improvement in Logan that we needed to see. I was a bit suspicious about exactly which illicit drug they were smoking and exactly how much they have smoked, but they have more data than we do, so maybe they did. And I think
maybe the improvement was he now knows what a kilometer is.
It's possible, and he can hit his braking points rather than thinking it's 100 feet, it's 100 meters, which is very different.
Yeah. But he's really in tune with that metric system now.
Yeah, he is not. He's not performing, and I think he needs to find another career.
Speaking of other drivers who have performance anxiety or struggles, Lance Stroll. Oh,
dear Lord. Every time Fernando Alonso drives that car in the way that Fernando does, and I understand that Fernando is amazing and he will wring the neck of any vehicle given him, unless it's got a GP2 engine, in which case there's no hope. I understand that, but every time Fernando goes faster and does a reasonable job, it makes Lance look even worse. Like,
I hate to bring this back to baseball, but... there is something in baseball called wins above replacement. It's an advanced metric stack essentially saying, like, how good are you as a player compared to, like, some, like, the next minor league player we can bring in, like, the average level player.
Right.
And Lance Stroll is so far below a replacement level driver.
To turn it to our pre-Christmas postseason special about performance in the software industry, this has sometimes been referred to me when people have said that you have people that a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. That's usually my perspective, but it gets turned around to be like, you know, you could just replace this person with a brand new person and maybe they'd be better or not. And I feel like that's the same kind of conversation, which is like, you've got someone and they're fine, but maybe somebody else would be better. Except in this case, Lance isn't fine and he's terrible and he should absolutely be replaced.
And I think the calculus is also even worse in this season because if we have so many drivers up for grabs in this silly season, And you have a car that, like, Fernando is clearly doing a good job of driving despite being put on soft tires halfway through a race at a track with high deg. Fernando's wringing the hell out of that car. And you're telling me you have, like, Carlos Sainz sitting over here without a contract? Like, hell, Valtteri Bottas doesn't have a contract. Like, I'd throw him in that car. Yuki doesn't have a contract. I'd throw him in that car. Like, there are so many good drivers out there that you could... put above Lance Stroll in that seat.
I'm going to say something really spicy.
I'm ready.
You could put Logan Sargeant in that seat and you would get a better performance.
No, see, at that point, we put Alex Albon into the Aston Martin. We put Lance in the Williams, and then we let them do a head-for-head battle for Fernando's retirement.
I agree, but you have to look at the greater picture, which is...
throw them in the Alpines because they're nowhere either.
It's the apparently Albon has basically signed on for the Williams Love program and he's totally staying there for a while.
He's doing great at the Williams. I don't hate that. And he's on the grid and I think he deserves to be on the grid.
Yeah, if he can help be part of that team turning itself around, that'd be amazing. And that's why I think he should stay there because that's something. But Logan, on the other hand, I feel like he needs to be out of the Williams, and he should go into the... That's what would save Logan Sargeant's career, is coming out of the Williams, going into a car that's not truly terrible, and driving it reasonably. That would get him more time and more recognition than being stuck at the back in a terrible car. And then Lance can go on and drive WEC instead.
There's only one small problem with that, is he has to not drive it terribly.
I know, but he's basically placing where Stroll is in a terrible car. So he can only be better.
I'm not sure that's true.
I think if you go look at the stats, he's not that far off Stroll.
Which is also concerning from Lance's bit.
Yes. But you have to remember there was some important news this week about Lance Stroll and Fernando, not just Fernando resigning. One is that Fernando came out and said that Lance is the most important driver for driver development because he's so sensitive to the car. And this is where, like, Fernando's, because I, as Fernando Alonso, just drive around the car's problems, and so I don't give them good feedback to help them develop the car. Brutal. And then Mike Crack came out saying that the entire team at Aston Martin is built entirely around Lance. It is about Lance, and that's why he won't be leaving. And you're just like, what is this team doing? At this point,
exactly, he won't be leaving. He will be going to drive the Valkyrie for the 24 hours of Le Mans, and then he'll still occasionally get. He'll probably be the reserve driver for F1. He'll get some testing time, so he can still help with like the development of the car. If his ass is truly that good, to quote like Niki Lauda and Rush, yeah, no,
yeah. So we've given everybody their beginning of season pips, helping them find out that they need to improve their performance on the job. Shall we roll into some real weekend, or do we have one final comment?
I have two final comments in the occasional job take section. Is with the exception of Lando Norris, I think we hit all the L named drivers on our occasional segment of who doesn't.
We did.
Yeah. So just for the sake of it, should we throw Lando in there? Should Lando still have a job?
Yes, I think it's worth asking the question. That's a great question because of what happened in the sprint race.
Sure. And also, I do think Lance might have saved Daniel's job for a little bit longer.
Because he can make the excuse that he would have been so much better if Lance hadn't rear-ended him.
I mean, I think he was on a bit of a bad strategy after the safety car, because he was going to need to stop again. However, he was running 8th or 9th at the time, which is the highest he's been all season. He was on the... he was looking like he could put that car in the points... and given kind of where everybody else finished, I think a points finish could have been very likely for Danny today, given without getting rear-ended by the Stroll.
There was a lovely shot of Liam today. Sitting on the pit wall of all places. So, anyway, qualification recap for the sprint.
Rain is always the great equalizer.
It is. I thought this was had shades of Turkey 2020 just because it was a bit slippy and it wasn't quite doing the right thing with the funny surface thing that they did.
Didn't Lance go on pole in that race?
He did. And then
so it couldn't have been. It couldn't have been the shades of Turkey 2020 because Lance was so far down the grid.
Because Lance was P1 and FP1. That's why I said shades. It's not exactly the same, but it's shades. It's, you know, history doesn't repeat, but it does rhyme. He just put his best performance in practice.
And then only Lance could go P1 and FP1 to P15 in sprint qualification.
Yeah, exactly.
Wherever he finished, it was back there. I think you had that was for the sprint race. But yeah, sprint qualifier, if there was ever time to put sprinklers on the track, sounds like a great show.
It was great. I really appreciated the fact that it wasn't just wet, it was oddly wet. That's why I keep saying about Turkey 20, because it got wet and then it was really slimy and everybody was going everywhere. It was definitely an opportunity for you to show your skills as a core driver.
I mean, I don't know how much that track's been used in the last 5 years, but it's been 5 years since Formula One was at Shanghai,
and they just resealed it. Like everybody thought apparently it was being resurfaced, but they didn't. They did that resealing thing. I don't know if you've seen that in your neighborhood. We have it in our neighborhood. Where instead of relaying the road, they basically give it a bit of a dust and then spray this or lay this weird sealant on top of it that supposedly keeps it tracked down. And apparently that's basically what they did at this track, which I thought was a very weird choice for an F1 track.
Yeah, but either way, I think like that track has to be very green going into this weekend, or is probably very green going into this weekend. And then you had rain immediately wash off any rubber they put down in FP1.
Yeah, I think if you watched in the quali for the full race, the evolution was ridiculous. It was very aggressively evolving.
Which is actually surprising after having run the sprint race for so long that it was still evolving that much going into it. But yeah.
I was curious what happened to Max, because Max, like, he's been amazing in wet. Like, he just spins the car and doesn't lose a moment. Been fantastic in the past. But in this one, it felt like in the sprint qualifying, he just wasn't vibing with it. And the story afterwards, that he said he just couldn't get the tires to turn on. But still, I was surprised.
I agree. That was the one shocker of Max. If there was any blemish on Max's weekend, it was definitely the sprint race qualifier. But if anything, I'm happy for that, because it at least gave the sprint a little bit of a show.
Yes.
Or it helped make the sprint a little bit of a show. Lewis putting it on...
second row, P2.
P2. Or first row, P2. Lando putting it on P1.
That deleted lap that got reinstated while watching it was just like, that was brutal as a viewer, because you're like, okay, I see how it's going to go. And then suddenly, when Nando is nowhere near anybody going fast at any point, you suddenly see him putting this 1.5 second faster lap than everybody else. You're like, what happened there? Turns out it was magic.
And then in the race, it only took two turns for Lando to lose P1 again.
Oh, Lando. I thought that was classic, Lewis. Just not even turning into you, just letting the car go wide and like, oh, I'm sorry, there wasn't enough room for you. That sucks for you.
Pulling back to our previous segment of does Lewis still have a job, I think between like the qualifying he put together in, well, sprint qualifying, of putting it on P2, where if rain is the great equalizer, he could do it. Or when your car's a boat, it's easy to drive through the water.
Exactly.
Or and then on top of that, like, P2 in the sprint, not bad. That's the highest that a Mercedes has finished this season.
Yes,
yeah, George hasn't been on the podium.
Correct, it's the first podium.
It's a sprint podium, but still,
it's not really a race.
No,
but I thought he did pretty good, especially as I think the car was clearly not being great. He did a great job holding on to P2, because I think that could easily, a few more laps, he'd have lost the P2. I think.
Yeah, but I mean, for the sprint, it worked out just fine. Quite the battle behind, though.
Oh, yeah, that was classic Fernando, but also amazing Fernando.
Did you watch the Instagram reel I sent you? Because I feel like it is worth mentioning for somebody's recap of the sprint race.
I do not believe I did.
So there was a scene from Brooklyn Nine-Nine where Chelsea Peretti's character is just, like, dancing around, listening to headphones, not realizing what's going on behind her. And, like, everybody else in the cast is, like, trying to deal with some criminal who's, like, breaking out of handcuffs and stuff. And it was, like, and Chelsea Peretti in this case was Max and Lewis just vibing at the front of the race, you know, just moving along. And then, like, behind was everybody fighting Fernando Alonso for third.
It was so good watching him try and be, well, not try to be the cork in the bottle, but be the cork in the bottle. And everybody on the commentating was like, when this goes, it's going to go boom. And then it absolutely went boom.
I mean, it took two or three corners in a part of the track that's really not that big on overtaking to, like, for just all to come undone.
I felt so bad for him when it turns out he had a puncture, right?
Well, he had a puncture because he hit Carlos.
Yes. Yeah, that was great. I feel sorry for Nando, but also brilliant. It was bright.
And then Checo's just like, woo, I'm going through. Like,
la-dee-da!
Yeah.
And then the Ferraris on the Ferraris.
Yeah, I mean, I there are no friends at Ferrari at this point in time, because Carlos is driving for his career. And
yep. And, yeah, well, Charles is driving for his career. He needs to step up to not look like a chump.
I mean, Lewis is only... what, this is race 5, there's 24 races, he's losing only 19 races away.
Yep. I saw a brilliant Photoshop of the Ferrari on Ferrari drama, where they took the message from Carlos from last race or two races ago, and were like, get Charles to come alongside so we can go over the line together. And it was the perfect shot of the two tires on the inside touching each other, and it was a beautiful shot. You're like, perfect.
And man, Max had just cruised to that win, though.
Yeah, I thought, you know, it was really interesting, because I was watching the first, what, five laps? He was really struggling. Like, Max couldn't get the pace. He couldn't...
Yeah, because he didn't have a battery.
Yeah, which question is why didn't he have the battery? And I think the tires weren't turned on either. I think they were still getting up to temperature. Not to fast forward to the race, but there was a comment made by a certain Mr. Nico Rosberg who said, "We all learnt today that the Red Bull has special turning vanes to blow cool air onto the tires." And I do wonder whether that maybe had played a part in that. But I thought that was interesting. But once he woke it up, once he'd smacked that battery and warmed those tires up, psh, off to the front and off he went.
Before we recorded, I was scrolling through social media, I believe as were you, to see like if we missed anything or is there anything we should talk about. And somebody had Max's onboard from the sprint race of him and GP just like using the sprint as another practice session of like, oh yeah, we'll do this in this corner. Oh yeah, try this in this corner. Like they're like, okay, we'll get this ready for the race. Like yeah.
I didn't realize. I thought when the new regulations had come out for this season for the sprint race that you were still in Parc Fermé, but you can change the car. I'd been wanting that. I did not realize that was allowed.
Yeah, I think it. And moving on to quali, I think that was a great like change of, oh cool, we're Parc Fermé for the sprint quali and sprint race, and then a new Parc Fermé for quali in the race, and that's great because. What Lewis was saying that they took the Mercedes cars in two different directions on setup, and Lewis didn't seem happy with that setup.
Well, we have to be clear that apparently, according to Nico, his BFF, Lewis is telling Porky Pies, and that they're always on the same setup. Per George,
they haven't been best friends since 2013 at the earliest, 2015 Austin at the latest.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm not quite sure what Nico's saying, but Nico's saying that. And also, if you're Nico Rosberg and you're talking to Mr. Russell, you're going to believe everything that Russell says? The answer is yes, but I don't think the rest of us should.
Well, that's because Nico Rosberg views George Russell as the second coming of Nico Rosberg.
Indeed, and that's because maybe Nando, Nico, and George hang out at the New Year's party when they're all having the F1 drive party with the cigars and the booze, partying hard.
No, Fernando can't be invited because he didn't beat Lewis in equal machinery.
True. That's why Nico knows that George is his BFF, because he's the only other driver to have beaten Lewis in the same machinery. Psh, boom.
Although I guess technically Lewis and Fernando tied on points that season.
Did they tie?
I think they tied.
I think maybe they did tie on points, but I thought Lewis was in front.
Lewis was in front. I know Lewis finished second, but I believe they had the same number of points. And it went to like a countback. Yes, they both had 109 points. And Lewis won on countback, I believe.
Okay. Yeah. See.
Lewis had 4 wins. Fernando had 4 wins. Lewis had 5 second places. Lando had 4 second places. So,
oh, there we go. That's the loss.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where were we? I've lost exactly where we were in this.
Qualifying.
Qualifying. Yeah, but apparently Lewis had to drive a car because he absolutely spanned that. Like, not only just didn't make it into Q2, did badly in that Q1.
I mean, if we want to put on tinfoil hats, hey, the track evolution was insane in Q1. And we could also say that Bono did not put them out, or the team did not put him out on track at the right time. Because they don't care about Lewis anymore because Lewis betrayed them to go to Ferrari.
I have a more most respectful interpretation version of that. And I think that they are both at fault, which is that they saw the track evolution coming. They also had seen the performance of the soft tire when George, the greatest tire whisperer of all time, had managed to make the tire do great things in sprint quali because he moved forward a lot and moved his station in life. That they decided that because of this, they were going to hold Lewis to the very end to take advantage of the track evolution and then spanned it. And I think Lewis went along with this and he shouldn't have done.
Well, they didn't hold him till the end because everybody else still got to do another lap after Lewis.
But did they? Oh, because he timed it wrong. So they timed it and they held him because he was sat in the pits while everybody else was going around. He just waited. They should have let him go out and do his thing and stopped trying to save tires.
No, he crossed the line, I think, with like a minute to go.
Yeah. It wasn't enough time for him to get around and do it again.
Yeah. They left it like with a minute to go, and then everybody else came through and set more times.
Yeah. And as Nico's pointed out, that was just terrible, unacceptable from Lewis.
I mean, he did lock up at the hairpin, but I don't think that was enough. I don't think that saved him.
The claim was that was half a second he lost on that.
Okay, that would have saved him.
Yeah. But, you know, such is life.
But track evolution would have saved him as well.
Yes.
And then Danny Ric outqualifies Yuki Tsunoda.
Yeah, she's very impressive. I was surprised by that. And he qualified, like, not just in front of him, like, meaningfully in front of him, right?
Yeah.
He got to... Did he get to Q3?
No, he think was 12th.
Okay.
But Yuki was, like, 17, 18.
Yeah.
17.
17th. So that was good.
And Danny got a new chassis this race.
Yes, and I still believe that when people say, oh, my chassis is broken and it's not a new design when they get the new one, it's just the placebo effect.
I mean, the placebo effect is very real.
Yes.
It's quite impressive, actually.
Yes, especially in F1.
I mean, I do
wonder...
Professional sports as a whole.
Well, in sports as a whole. What's the term you call? You said used a few episodes ago? The yips.
Yes.
Yes. I do also wonder whether Danny has appropriately hired a religious deity of some description, an astrologer, maybe all the major religions, maybe even some minor religions to come and like vibe on his car to give him the best feeling. He strikes me as exactly that type of person.
Hang some incense from the halo or something.
Exactly, exactly. He's got the little, you know, he went down to the O'Reilly or whatever the equivalent is in China right before the race, picked it, slapped it on the halo and called it good. It worked great for him until the end, kind of, halfway through actually. Max has 6 consecutive poles now,
which he does.
Is 2 away from Senna,
which is the record.
Interesting.
Senna has the record with 8 consecutive poles, because they were talking about it on the commentary of like, oh, Max could move on to 6 consecutive poles, and I'm like, oh, that's a side quest I don't think Max has completed yet. Who has the most consecutive poles? And it's like, oh, it's Senna at 8. He's 2 away.
He needs to work on that. Related to Senna and my continuing rewatch of old F1 races, or at least the highlights, Senna, I've got to the season where it's into Senna's second season. I'll say in Senna's first season, he was doing amazing things with that car, and I definitely get strong Max vibes between the two of them.
I can see it.
Yeah.
So coming up, we have Miami, where I think Max could put it on pole. We have Imola, where Max could put it on pole.
Yep.
And then we have Monaco. So he could break Senna's record at Monaco.
Yeah, but remember, there are people who are willing to put it in a wall to make sure he doesn't get it.
Like himself.
True. He could try to speed run all the crazy things. Not just the records and the statistics, but also the situations.
Yeah, just you know, do the first lap, be P1 after the first lap, go out before everybody else, and just spin it at Portier. Block the whole track.
You know, of all the things I think Max would do, that strikes me as not being Max. I agree. Like Max is somewhat of a dirty driver, but he's not a cheating driver.
No, Max, I think, wants to win on merit or wheel to wheel. He's not going to do any tricks like that.
Exactly. But his teammate, or the one driver whose home race that would be, I'm not sure I wouldn't put it past them.
Back to China.
China. First time in 5 years for an interesting track that looks exactly the same as Malaysia.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a classic Tilke track.
Does that include the way the grandstands are set up? Because that's what makes me think of Malaysia. It's got the little lily pad things.
Yeah. And Bahrain as well kind of has that.
Oh, yeah, it kind of does, doesn't it? But very different. Yeah. I get it. Yeah, I got it now. Yeah,
But it's still a classic Tilke track.
No. Interesting track.
It's a good track. I forgot it was a good track.
Because we haven't been there for 5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I think the turn one, two. I think the turn one, two, three, four. How many turns are in that first turn? Complex the snail.
Yeah, and I hadn't realized it had the elevation drop as well, which I think is what adds that extra bit of spice.
It goes uphill and then downhill.
There was somebody who was saying this before the race. Maybe it was Nico. Did you know he has beaten Lewis Hamilton in the same machinery, a 7-time world champion?
Nico Rosberg?
Nico Rosberg. I didn't know that. Interesting, yeah.
Anyway,
he was saying that it's a really interesting track because you can take different lines and still be fast. And if you watch that first corner, complex, the snail, is absolutely a beautiful example of that. I've spent the entire race, including on the last lap, watching people go around it. And I'm like, oh, no, they've gone too far. That's just a different line as they pull it back and make it work again. It was fascinating.
Yeah, but I think that's one of the things of there's also kind of the turn complex after that where, like, you do see some overtaking. Like, there's also some spots there of, you know, you can do different lines, different overtakes. It's a good track. It's a good track. And I think the... as much as I liked how this race turned out, I think we are robbed of a very interesting strategy battle between the Ferrari and the McLarens with kind of Lando and Charles shadowing each other to go long on the one stop and Piastri and Carlos going for the two stop. I think that could have gotten very interesting.
So you're saying not only did Stroll not drive well, rob Danny, he also robbed us, the viewer, of a great race.
And Bottas's engine did, but still, yeah, Stroll's fault.
Okay. Flipping Ferrari engines. So what happened in this race is we've skirted it. We have a note here that says Alonso at the start. Classic, I think this was classic Fernando. I think he got distracted.
Getting right past Checo, yeah.
And I think he just got distracted by driving the wheels off the car and forgot that it was only the first five laps.
Yeah, but I mean, that set him up well for kind of the rest of the race. Just kind of being in that good position to some extent.
Yeah.
He was starting to fall back a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. The great example of out driving the car, and I think he did a great job with that.
That's not the reason I think Fernando finished where he finished. I think it was the soft tire strategy, but we'll get to that. So, and then there was some Ferrari on Ferrari drama right at the start, going through that same turn 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 complex.
I do remember that, but I can't, like, I can remember there was a thing, but I can't remember what happened. What was
it? You watched the race 2 hours ago, man.
I know, and I've already forgotten what happened. It's because there was all the other things in the middle.
I believe Carlos ran wide, pushing Charles wide, and they both went wide, and the McLarens kind of snuck through, or at least one of the McLarens snuck through.
Oh, I vaguely remember that. That's completely, it's my age. It's my age.
Yeah, fair enough. And then Max just, you know, this new 1 second DRS rule just does not affect Max Verstappen when you're 1.1 seconds ahead at the end of the first lap.
I was always a believer that the DRS should be enabled sooner. And in hindsight, I was so wrong. It is absolutely the worst thing in the world to do it because nobody will overtake because they're too scared to bend the car. They're too close and the cars are too slow to be able to overtake. And I don't mean like front wise, but like left to righty wise. And so enabling the DRS just creates a train all the way down the field that takes way longer to break up. And when they used to wait three laps, you would get to see more chunks. You'd have multiple trains, not just the one train. And I feel like we end up with the one train today. I think it's a terrible idea. But Max does a great job of getting out front and breaking that DRS and not being involved.
I have a rule change to propose to you.
Go on.
What if instead of DRS zones as we currently have them, just everybody got like 60 seconds of DRS usage throughout the race?
Like KERS used to be?
KERS or push to pass an IndyCar. Like you get a certain amount of time you can use it throughout the whole race.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'd be tempted to say that you should make that, you get it in twice per lap, but you have to decide where you're going to use it.
Hmm.
Your point being that it encourages people to strategize, and maybe in the most interesting way, people use DRS at the end to try and like make it spicy. And my comment would be is it gives you every lap, gives an opportunity, but people will just keep using it in the same place all the time.
Yeah, yeah. Because I think it'd be interesting, like, you know, if I saved my DRS the whole race and then I slap on some soft tires and go DRS happy for the last, like, 10 laps.
Yeah. Because you've saved it up.
Because I've saved it up and now I get 10 seconds of DRS a lap.
Yeah.
Or maybe 90 seconds or something, but, like, yeah.
I can subscribe to that.
It'd be worth seeing how it affects races because I don't think we're in a spot where we can get rid of DRS. But I think how DRS works could change.
There's this weird thing that I've seen in these old races that I'm watching, which is people will be prepared to make a lunge, and sometimes that ends badly, and sometimes it ends amazingly. And it does separate the wheat from the chaff in terms of the driver's ability and being able to pull those off. And I feel like DRS has encouraged this overly strategic thinking in terms of drivers, where it's like, oh, I'm going to use the DRS to make the pass. And that ostensibly is the purpose of DRS. But instead of it making like a... It's not on the bubble whether it's going to work or not. Like, I think there's been some tracks where they've got it just right, but most tracks, it's like, oh, I'm just going to use this, and then I'm going to go past because I've got the DRS. And I just...
But see, I think that plays back into why China is actually a good track, because we saw several overtakes, I want to say, at, like, turn 6, 7,
mm-hmm.
You know, which is not going into DRS right. zone. It's all about how you come out of that snail complex yes. at turns 1, 3, and 4, and yes. you didn't need DRS to make it happen.
Yes, I agree with that. Then that is the sentiment that I just ponder about DRS being a good or bad thing.
I also think to some extent, like, yes, the racing is just different and it's obviously different. But at the same point in time, like, you're in a situation where, you know, the races you were watching in the 80s, you know, oh, my car's, if I have the best car on the grid, there's probably going to be a third to a fourth of the races where my engine's going to blow up.
Yes.
And
yes.
I'm not going to finish. So I already know everybody's in for like at least 3 or 4 DNFs in the season. So if I screw up a lunge and I DNF, that's okay. Because, you know, this person winning this race, they're going to DNF in 3 races time.
Yes, I can totally see that. And maybe that's the real answer for making this the most entertaining motorsport in the world. It's not that you make the cars faster and better at overtaking. You have a lottery about whose car is going to randomly fail throughout the race, and you don't know until it's failed.
What if we tie it to a fan vote for our social media?
Yes! Yes, exactly. That'd be amazing.
Oh, that would be great, just for the sense of, like, whose car do you want to see fail today, and why is it always Lance Stroll's?
Oh, no. It would always be the one that everybody's hating on, and it would be Max at the moment, it would have been Lewis before, and it would have been Michael Schumacher before, and it would have been Vettel before. The only person this would never have happened to would be Fernando Alonso.
Oh, hard disagree. Oh,
I absolutely think nobody would have voted to explode Fernando Alonso's car.
You don't think Honda would have done a massive campaign in like 2016 or whatever it was, 2015?
I could see Fernando getting all of his social media follows to make sure that everybody else's car blows up. That would be perfect.
I'm sure the Schumi fans would have blown him up in 2005.
Maybe. I don't feel like Fernando has ever been dominant to reach that level where everybody's like, oh God, it's boring because Fernando's driving. Psh, whatever.
You know, if they left it to team personnel, Alonso would definitely have his car exploded, given how much carnage he has left in his wake at different teams.
That's so true. So true.
Yeah, the fans might not vote against him, but the McLaren garage will. The Ferrari garage will.
Oh, yes.
The Renault garage will.
Yes.
Nelson Piquet Jr. definitely will.
Burn. Should we get back to today's race?
Yeah, Max went off into the distance and won. Hooray.
Yeah, great. What is up with Checo? Is that guy able to drive a car at all? It's terrible. I do think he's got a job. So.
Yeah, so apparently I saw a thing that Christian Horner said that Checo's having a much better year because he's not focusing on Max Verstappen.
Yes, I agree.
Which I could definitely see.
And I don't like agreeing with Mr. Horner, but yes, I agree. Related to that, there was a comment where Helmut Marko said that Carlos has this massive deal from Audi and Red Bull can't possibly compete with that, but they are still talking to Carlos. But that's the way it is at the moment, so it's not going to be Carlos and a Red Bull. At which point, apparently Christian Horner, continuing to bring up dead bodies, is like, no, that's all lies. There's no such thing happening with that. I'm sure everybody wants Carlos, but no, that's not nothing to do with us.
Right. I mentioned that there was a potentially strategy battle going on between the Ferrari and McLarens. I love a good strategy battle. I think it's great.
I like it when it's a close strategy battle. Like,
it was looking good. It was looking like it was going
to
be good.
Yeah, yeah. It would come down to the ability of somebody with a wheel gun getting it on or off quickly enough.
Right. I like that. Speaking of people getting wheel guns on and off quickly enough, did you know that Sauber was not the worst pit stop team of this race?
I did not. Who was this?
Well, Alpine, because they tried to kill one of their mechanics.
Oh, yeah. No, I remember that.
But Zhou had a 5-second pit stop and a 3-second pit stop.
Yes, and they said on the thing that they've like temporarily fixed them. They did a pretty good job to temporarily fix them.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Red Bull, displaying their pit stop dominance that only Merck can look on in awe, is in a green flag condition. They did 2-0 and 2-1 with Max and Checo in a double stack.
That's pretty good work.
Yeah, I mean, part of that is Checo is so far behind Max that they could do it, but he was still, they didn't have enough time to like run back in, grab new tires, run back out. No, it was a double stack.
By the time Max was driving off, Checo was already over the pit lane line.
Yeah.
So,
and that was some impressive work to double stack in a green flag situation and go 2-0, 2-1.
So you have all the teams hiring aerodynamicists and engine this and blah, 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 the other. Why are they not just hiring the pit crew, right? If you're Mercedes, just hire the whole pit crew from Red Bull. So you're going to pay them through the nose. They don't have to do the other crap that they have to deal with, and they'll pay them more. And please come and just change our tires quickly.
Cost cap?
At this point, does the cost cap really matter?
We'll make it up in catering.
Exactly.
I did like the 8 marshals trying to get Bottas's car off the track and it getting more and more on the track as they tried to rock this thing.
Did you see the front suspension arm where the guy's like trying to lift it and it's flexing, and I'm like, I can just imagine the engineers being like, no, don't break it, it's bad enough already, I gotta buy a new engine.
Yeah. And then probably the most talked about part of the race, at least from what I was talking to people about, the safety car restart. We have
Which
to
one?
Talk about it. The first, the one that led to the second one.
Yes. Did the incident that we are about to talk to actually lead to the second one? I thought that was because Yuki's car just went bang.
It got banged into by the second biggest idiot on the track.
Yes, I thought that was the reason for the safety car.
Either way, in one lap, we had the two biggest idiots in Formula One.
Yes.
Which I don't think that's... Oh, screw it. Yeah, the two biggest idiots in Formula One ruining all of Visa Red Bull Cash App's races.
And the opportunity for an exciting strategy battle for us.
Yeah.
This is Stroll. This was all Stroll.
Not according to Stroll, which, given our question at the top of the show, there is a TikTok video that I'm sure Dominic will link in the show notes of a woman who, at a bank, hit a yellow bollard and then just continued to keep driving against the yellow bollard and caused $30,000 worth of damage to her car and was like, how is this my fault? This is like the same vibes as Lance of like, yeah, there's a great interview with Danny Rick in the Pen where it's like, oh yeah, Lance thinks it's your fault. And he's like, what? I've just gone to see the onboard. Like, I was just calming down. Now I'm furious again. And he's totally right. Because if you watch what he says versus Lance's onboard, Lance is looking to the corner and not looking at the driver in front of him. And he hits him. Oscar Piastri had a great comment after the race of it's like, yeah, but none of us hit anybody.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. It was. Here's also what I found funny. The mistake of the moment when you blame other drivers seems to be brake checking, right? Everybody's like, oh, brake check this, brake check the other. And Stroll immediately dived for that. And I think that's just like a great example of he wasn't thinking about driving, he was thinking about the excuse. It was terrible. He screwed it up and it was bad. And then he didn't take ownership for it.
Max took more ownership of it in the cool down room than Lance did.
He did. I missed this.
Yeah, on this week's episode of the Max Verstappen podcast, when they saw the incident in the cooldown room, he was like, oh, that might have been my fault. And I think Lando was like, yeah, it was, just from like the slowing down at the hairpin.
Was it the commentators were trying to blame Fernando and said that he, you know, overcooked it a little bit? And I'm like, oh, sure, but it was like, come on, people.
Yeah.
Really? I think... There was no... We got a 10-second penalty, right? I feel like he deserved a more penalty for that. That was pretty bad.
The McLaren driver, Oscar Piastri, was also a victim of the Ricciardo-Stroll collision. Regarding Stroll's claim that everyone in front of him suddenly braked, he said meaningfully, yeah, but everyone else didn't crash into each other. And then somehow, yeah. And then Danny Rick's diffuser was gone. He retired. And then he gets a 3-place grid penalty because he didn't finish the race to get a 10-second penalty for overtaking Hulkenberg in the second... safety car, however that worked out. They were really penalty happy for like 10 minutes there.
Yeah, I think they were a bit cranky. And they're continuing to exact their policy from earlier in the season of we're basically going to go for the higher penalty when there's a cheaper penalty available.
Yeah. And then meanwhile, Lance is like, somehow Fernando got 3 penalty points for hitting Sainz in the sprint.
Yes.
And didn't get a grid drop for like even the Miami sprint, despite retiring the car with a 10-second penalty. And then Lance causes like a crash that ruins 2 drivers' races and he only gets 2 penalty points. What is going on?
Yeah, that's at first I thought that maybe Lance was pulling a Nelson Piquet Jr. with Flavio Briatore hovering over his shoulder and saying, this is how we're going to get Fernando's soft tires to work. But no, I think he was just a complete tool. So he should stroll right off the grid.
There's a lot of that sentiment going on. I even found an interview with Lance after the race. And he was like, well, you know, these things happen. Like, I think it was a racing incident at anything. I can't believe I got blamed for it. It's like, bud, you rear-ended him super hard. Like,
but here's the thing. There is always an opportunity for a whoopsie. I get it. Things happen. Life happens, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
But he consistently is involved with them. It's always him. Right? Like... between him and K-Mag, they go around the track, and if there's an incident being caused that's, like, dumb, it's one of those two.
Yeah, because then half a lap later, K-Mag bangs into Yuki and ruins Yuki's race.
Exactly. It's, like, just...
Yeah, I think, you know, as much as I think Lance Stroll is a meme on the grid of, like, oh, look how terrible this Nepo baby is at driving around in circles, it's fine when he's taking himself out in Jeddah. Oh, look, he clipped a wall and, you know, now we get a safety car. Hooray. Thanks, Lance. Like, but no, now, like when he's actively ruining other people's races, it's...
Yes, I agree.
It it's not good.
Yes. No, and he just needs to go get another job, man. Put Leon Lawson in the car. It'd be better. Or Logan, as I said earlier.
I don't think he could be bad in 24-hour endurance races.
No, I agree. Absolutely agree. Absolutely agree. What else have we got here?
Lewis had a good recovery drive. He ended up in the points. Not honestly that far behind George, given everything.
It was really curious because I think Lewis took a while to get going. And there was a radio message that was like, Lewis said, man, those tires suck or something like that. And he'd just been in the...
Yeah, those were not good tires. Yeah.
That was it. And I wasn't sure whether that meant the tires he just put on or the ones he'd taken off. But in hindsight, it was clear the ones he'd taken off.
It was the softs. He did not like the softs.
There's this really interesting thing of like... George was called Mr. Saturday, and I think he continues to prove in many ways, especially with a terrible car, he is Mr. Saturday, because he seems to do a pretty reasonable job in qualifying most of the time, but then can't quite convert it in the race. And whether it's Piastri-like problems where he eats all his tires, which I think he kind of does, or whether the fact that in brutal honesty, the car is genuinely crap and he can't race the car, because this was a problem when he was in the Williams. He was always in the Williams and then go backwards because the car was terrible. Lewis, on the other hand, I think I think he's not given up, but he's like, whatever, I'm not going to win anything this year. And when Lewis doesn't think he can win, he's not going to drive brilliantly. But he managed to pull it out of the bag, and he managed to make pretty good forward progress. And I want to say if he'd had maybe another 5 more laps, I think he could have got Oscar and would have been in a pretty good place. And at which point, George would have lost to Fernando, and they'd have been in the same place, and one of them started in 18th.
Yeah. Kind of jumping ahead, this goes on to my takes and rumors section, which is a bit of a guest spot because I was talking about it with a friend. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if Lewis is somewhat hurting the Mercedes on purpose. Because as we've talked about several times in this podcast, the Mercedes has data correlation issues and they're between their wind tunnels and CFD models and everything else. So the fact of if they fall further in the championship and they don't get... they get more tunnel time, it's not going to help them because they don't know what's going on. I mean, they might actually end up finding out what's going on, but they could start to lose constructor money or championship money. Or
sponsorship money.
And that could lead to losing sponsorship money. And, you know, that leads to a bit of a spot that's not so good for Merck and not so good for Toto and not so good for Mercedes and what Daumer, who owns them and all. And things start to look a little bit different. In fact, as I was scrolling social media post-race, I ended up with the Sky after chat with Karoon and Damon Hill. And Damon, without saying it, was saying that Toto is really not responsible for any of the success Mercedes has had, that he came in on Ross Braun's coattails. Ross Braun set up the Mercedes for success. Toto was able to manage that success through the last formula, and then now that they've actually had to totally redesign the car, Toto is not capable of building a winning car in such the way that Ross Braun was.
Have you heard of the analogy in from at least business and maybe to a certain extent tech business of the wartime CEO versus the peacetime CEO?
No, but I've read The Godfather.
I have not read The Godfather, nor have I seen the films.
That would be a wartime conciliary versus a peacetime conciliary.
Interesting. Braun is a great wartime designer, engineer, team principal, and he did that at Ferrari, right? Took them from being terrible to being great, basically did the same with Honda/Braun/Mercedes. And Toto is a great peacetime CEO. He's great at keeping the team going and getting everything. And you know, once you're in the great place, he can optimize it, and he's at the local maxima, and he can keep it at the local maxima, and he gets the team, creates a great environment, supports everybody. But now that's not the case.
Right, so Toto Wolff is Robert Duvall. Gotcha.
I don't understand the reference here.
The Godfather.
Okay, I'm going to have to watch this. It's free on Apple TV Plus right now.
It's a good movie.
I know, but it's really long, isn't it?
I mean, it's a good movie.
Okay, maybe I'll consider that. But I do think there is something in that could definitely be playing into it. And I think it's really fascinating to think about what that means for Fred at Ferrari. Was Binotto a peacetime CEO, and Fred, who seems to be doing, credit to Fred, he seems to be mostly getting them in the right place, right? Like, he's helping them make better strategy calls.
Oh yeah, if anybody can find a wartime conciliary, it's the fucking Italians.
True.
Going back to The Godfather again, yeah. You should watch this movie, it's very good.
Yeah, I take the point, Andrew. I will add it to my watch list. But it's certainly interesting. I'm not sure I subscribe to the theory here that he's tanking it on purpose. But I do
Lewis?
Think... Yes, I don't think he's doing it on purpose. I do think he could be not trying, if that makes any sense. Like, he's not being malicious about it, but he's like, what's the point? It doesn't do me any good.
Yeah, there is no benefit to him helping Mercedes do well this season.
Indeed. Indeed.
I do like the theory that that Toto is not a wartime conciliary.
Yeah, I think that's definitely possible.
Yeah.
Predictions?
Did we cover everything we want to talk about in the race? I think so.
There's three more items here, although technically one of them we already talked about. One, Lando's still the bridesmaid.
I'm very happy China had trophies that he could not break.
They were the ones that they could wear, right?
Yeah, yeah. It goes back to like when they used to wear wreaths on their necks.
Yes.
It's fine. I like it.
Yeah. I look forward to Lando's first win, and I'm going to be very curious to see what his performance is after his first win. Maybe he'll get it this year.
I mean, it'll be great at IndyCar. You know, when Zach Brown is willing to give another McLaren driver a shot to try to get a win because Lando still hasn't gotten a win.
Oh, that's brutal. The last winner, technically, is Danny Ricciardo.
Not technically, factually.
True, but some people, especially this weekend, they talk about the sprint win and Piastri got sprint win.
That's true.
Predictions?
I had some. Do you want to add any?
Here's my prediction. Miami will be a total non-race. Nothing exciting is going to happen. The order's basically going to be the same. Nobody's going to screw up. Nobody's going to crash into anybody. It's going to be absolutely the most boring race. Not necessarily the season. That'll be Monaco. But Miami is winding us up and preparing us for the utter boredom that is Monaco.
If you don't want to watch Monaco, just watch the Indy 500. It's much better.
I need to put them on two screens at the same time. Are they concurrent? Are they live in the real world, or are they offset?
They're offset.
Boo!
No, it's good. It's even so offset that I can... Because it... I want to say the Indy 500 doesn't start until 10 a.m. our time. The race starts at 12:45 Eastern, so what, 9:45 our time? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, so you can have plenty of time to wake up, watch Monaco, and then watch the Indy 500.
Well, I hope Monaco doesn't rain, because then it'll be even longer and even more boring.
Fair enough.
Yes, so Miami, boring race. That's what I'm going
for. You think a good 1 p.m. afternoon snooze for us?
Correct.
Awesome. I'm going to say random bits of rain because it's Miami.
True.
Yeah, could have some rain.
I could subscribe.
I'll say Max on pole because I want him to go for the side quests.
And this is the Senna side quest, right?
Yeah, the Senna side quest. Okay. And I'll also say that Danny Rick shows that China wasn't a fluke.
Interesting. I'm going to take the no on this. Because I think Yuki was just, it took him so long to recover from the high that was Japan. Being in his home race, he ate too much. He was just off vibing this weekend. But next weekend, when he's back in Miami, he's good to go.
You know, I just realized something. This morning before I watched the race, I almost texted you saying, I want to add a prediction that the hairpin at the end of the long straight causes drama. Or there's like an incident there. And sure enough, like, Stroll hit Danny. It would have been perfect. I should have texted you.
You should have done. And it was the one where everybody was out breaking themselves. Everybody was making whoopsies. It's where the Ferraris hit each other. It was the corner of the race. You know, that's the true winner of the Chinese Grand Prix.
The hairpin at the end of the straight?
The hairpin at the end of the straight.
The true winner was the hairpin that was at the race the whole time.
So, another week, another race. We're always waiting for your feedback. Write into feedback@tinfoilhelmets.com. And let us know your conspiracies, feedback, and wants. Also, tell your friends to like, listen, rate, and subscribe on all your favorite streaming media services.
Well, I guess we'll be back in 2 weeks' time for the Crypto.com Miami Formula One Grand Prix.
How is it still the Crypto.com? How do they have any money to pay for the sponsorship?
You know the best part? Let's take this decentralized currency and centralize it in one place.
Miami. Best place.
Or crypto.com.